This is the podcast for June 15th, 2012. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside the Fox News feminist relocation camp, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Yeah, I'm not sure I like that.
Having a chick read your lines is going to bother
wrong.
You. We need to talk about Fox News.
Mm-hmm.
It got so bad that Gretchen Carlson walked off the set for 5 whole minutes and laughing all the way.
Yeah, all the way to the bank.
She finally had it up to here with Brian Kilmeade and his sexism.
Now, since I can't see you, when you say up to here, are you putting your hand near the cooter region?
Right, right around the area of the transvaginal ultrasound.
I see, the junk area, as it were. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, you know, if you... I don't know what to say.
It's funny. I thought that
Gretchen discovered her kosher dietary rules after working 10 years at a hog rendering plant.
Yeah.
Oh gosh. And I'm sorry, but Gretchen, let me explain something to you. And it's going to come as a shock to you, but you and Brian Kilmeade, this is not a gender specific thing. You're both whores, and you play a role on television. And your job is to shut the fuck up, shake your blonde head at the camera, look stupid, and say whatever Roger Ailes tells you.
I looked it up on the Google. Mm-hmm. Barack Obama has this aura of Muslim.
Mm-hmm. And if you have problems suppressing your gag reflexes, honey, there's a 50,000 bimbos lined up to take your job.
Yeah, well, and someone else said, what's your next career move, Gretchen? Hooters or current TV?
Yeah.
She's too old for – the sad thing is there's so much sexism in the media. She is too old for either one of those jobs.
Yeah.
That's a tragedy.
Well, Cokie Roberts has to die someday.
I know. She can go be the new Cokie Roberts, see?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, well, I don't think anyone has any sympathy for Gretchen Carlson. But
no, but Anthony Hopkins is not a serial killer, Gretchen. He plays one on TV. And this is – there's a story that – Harlan Ellison tells a lot about Dan Blocker, who, if you don't know, was the
Blocker.
He played Hoss, big old, gigantic man mountain actor on Bonanza. He was one of the sons. And this nice old lady came up to him one day and said, you know, Hoss, and if you and your brothers ever get tired of Hop Sing's cooking, why, I'll come on up to the Ponderosa and cook for you. And he had to tell her, man, my name's Dan Blocker, not Haas, and I'm an actor. And every day after work, I basically drive home to San whatever to my family where I live. And she couldn't process that information. It was, no, I see you on the TV. You're a cowboy. And you know, it's the same thing with soap opera villains getting attacked at Bonnie Teller for being villainous. There are millions of Americans who can't process the difference between acting and real life. And people flock to Fox because Roger Ailes pays people enormous amounts of money, basically hookers, male and female, prostitutes, male and female, to dress up as news anchors and tell bigoted, paranoid losers that their bigoted paranoia is really patriotic and that their the voices in their heads are really true. And sometimes the actors who play these roles forget the fact that they're acting, and they start getting offended by something that's going on around them when inherently everything around you, Gretchen, is offensive. What you do is offensive. The fact that Juan Williams is such a boot-licking scum on your show, on the Sunday morning show, is offensive. The fact that you have him on as a Muppet is offensive. The fact that you have Mara Lyons, everything you do, Gretchen, other than The Simpsons, frankly, is horribly offensive and an affront to democracy because your audience doesn't know you're acting. They take you seriously. So when you yourself forget the fact that you're basically a paid hooker and get offended when one of your clients wants to do something freaky to you that offends you, again, there's 50,000 bimbos lined up with better gag reflexes than yours and better legs who are willing to take your job. So why don't you shut up and sit down and do what you're told, or one of these fine days, walk out and tell the truth. That would be a delightful thing. And there's been an epidemic of people walking out of the GOP
and telling the truth. And part of it is that all of a sudden. I'm saying that laughingly.
Uh-huh.
They've just gone too far.
This time.
I want to bring up this Arizona GOP spokesman on a related subject. But by the way, we did not mention what Kilmeade said that got her so upset. But it was the same old about women in sports. And, they get to play tennis and they get to play golf. And now what do they want? Mm-hmm. And she stood up and just walked away laughing and saying, okay, you just read the headlines. I'm just going to go over here. Mm-hmm. And he responded with, yeah, she needs a shower.
Just go rent Anchorman.
Yeah, that's what we just thought. Are they reenacting that as a private joke? Is that what's happening? Because it really felt that way. I mean, Driftglass, you talk about liberals being right for 50 years.
Yeah.
Feminists have been right forever, too.
Oh, yeah.
And there is this clubby atmosphere of men and sexism. And, you know, we saw it with the New York Senate race with Carl Paladino.
Mm-hmm.
Of just total blindness to how offensive they are and how things that they would never say in front of their daughters just get bandied about.
Oh,
because women are whores and women are tramps and women are this and horse porn and let's do this. This Arizona GOP spokesman got upset because and needed to respond to a news story where a woman reporter whose name I'm scrolling down here. The Arizona reporter was Lori Roberts, and she is a longtime writer for the Arizonan Republic. She interviewed another woman named Kathy Petsas, who is a self-described lifelong member of the GOP. Kathy Petsas was complaining about the state Republican Party. And the title of the article was "To De-Kook Arizona, Start with the State Republican Party." Kathy Petsas apparently has been a lifelong Republican. She has donated to the state Republican Party, and she is fed up with the anti-immigration craziness and the governor just being nuts. And she's come out. I credit her for coming out by name, being interviewed, giving her name, and saying, I am a lifelong Republican. However, I disagree with this and this and this and this, and I'm not going to donate to the state GOP anymore because I hold those in leadership responsible for what they've done to this party. And that's a brave move. You and I have disagreements about that, but I think people who do that need to be acknowledged. I'm not talking about David Frum, who's doing it obviously as a mercenary way to keep his name in the limelight.
No.
But I think boots on the ground Republicans who say enough need to be credited for doing that.
I agree.
Now, let me just finish my story, and then we'll go and talk about what you think about her. Shane Wickfors, the communications director for the state GOP, said in a blog post that was not on the state GOP website. However, he did state that he is a spokesman for the state Republican Party in his blog post. Said, quote, Petsas, who's Kathy Petsas, she's the Republican woman who was interviewed, never made an attempt to provide any constructive criticism to the state party. Instead, Ms. Petsas ran off to Lori Roberts and engaged her in a bitch session.
Yeah. Nice.
And people took offense at this and called it a slam and got upset with him and said, don't you think you should apologize for the use of that word? And he just doubled down. There's nothing wrong with using that. It's a colloquialism. Go to any corporate boardroom and you'll hear that reference.
And he's right.
And he's, of course he's right.
He's absolutely right.
You know who's there? Carl Paladino.
Hey, what?
And a bunch
what?
Of...
Horse porn is just part of the trade. You know, that's just what we do here.
I'm in construction.
What do you want? And there's a certain refreshing honesty. I think I mentioned before, my ex, a very fine person, was once upon a time was a person who sat in judgment of others in court and heard these cases of employment discrimination and a bunch of other things. And generally, cases only came to court after they had desperately tried to get everyone involved to go to mediation.
Right.
So the only cases that came were the ones that, fuck, I'm just going to sue. And one party or the other was just intractable and had to go to court. Mm-hmm. And the number of times the owners of construction firms, the owners of manufacturing companies, old white guys with a sense of absolute fucking fuck you privilege would show up in court as the person being sued and get up on the stand and say, hey, fuck yeah, I grabbed her ass. I get to do that. She works for me. I own that bitch. Under oath, wow. Because that's wow. how they were raised.
In front
raised.
Of a woman judge or a woman yeah, fuck yeah. jury what, or whatever.
What
yeah.
the fuck, man? I pay her salary. That's part of what it means to
and
work
woman,
for somebody, right?
The woman
right?
taking the deposition is just yeah. turning 15 shades of green.
Well, and the person's lawyer is just
yeah, hanging his head, like oh,
crawling out
God.
The door. And waiting
oh,
for the earth
God.
To open up and swallow him. Yeah. But it's that that is an absolute sense. There are people in this country. There are millions of people in this country. Most of them Republicans. Mm-hmm. I know them. Yeah. Old Republican white men who absolutely believe it is their white supremacist privilege, their inalienable right to treat black people as footstools, to slap Mexicans around because they're lazy, mm-hmm. to fob off every problem in the country on minorities and uppity brads yeah, and to yeah. get their dick sucked by their employees because that's what it means to be a capitalist in America. Mm-hmm. And they really believe it. I'm not kidding. This is not an exaggeration in any sense of the word. They really believe that. And you will never reach those people. You will never persuade them that maybe you should tone it down because fuck
Brian
that political
Kilmeade,
correctness nonsense.
Brian Kilmeade, that's his stock and trade shtick. I mean, mm-hmm. that it's a game with him, and it's part of his ha-ha, we're all in the locker room and look at this blonde who looks like a Hooters waitress, only she's a little long in the tooth, don't you think?
Hey, honey, shake that moneymaker over here and get us a drink.
And read us some headlines, yeah. Cause
well, this is why America loves it at Mad Men.
Yeah,
because it's,
yeah,
you know, it's,
yeah.
That was one, and there was a time in this country where that attitude, this is why people like that fondly remember the
40s. It's the good old days. That's the good old days. Unless you were African American or a woman or Hispanic
or
a minority or gay or anything other than the white guy with money.
Times were good. Cotton was high, baby. You could do anything you wanted. Yeah. And you could
you have a bar in your office.
Shit, yeah. You could have hookers in your office. What are you kidding me? That's part of the that's part of the deal. You could write that shit off. And you could drink at lunch and smoke all you wanted. You had a wife and a mistress. And America was absolutely unopposed in terms of its manufacturing and industrial might. So with a little bit of hard work or even a lot of hard work, not to take away from the hours these guys put in, if you won the birth lottery and were born white and male in that period, you could make a fuckload of money. And you could make a fuckload of money and enjoy the privilege, the God-given privilege, the right that God gave you to be a white male goddamn American. And you should all bow in – and this was essentially the subtext of David Brooks' column yesterday, which was we don't kneel and obey our authority figures like we used to, and that's why the country's fucked up. Well, yeah, that's true, but these guys all put the cart before the horse. If they hadn't been born in this real specific period of time, none of this would have happened. There was no, they had to have all of these economic circumstances and historical forces that coming into play at just the right time for them to get rich. And they did get rich, and God bless them. They did very, very well, and their kids did very, very well. But they codified their sick, paternalistic, racist attitudes as the definition of what it means to be an American. And every time someone comes and takes some of that away from them and says, you can't treat women like that anymore. You're stealing their country from them. Yep. You're stealing what they believe their rights are away from them. And that's why they flipped out over Barack Obama. When you can't call black people the N-word anymore, mm-hmm. when there's shame associated with that, when you have to take that underground, there's a real sense that you're stealing their God-given rights away from them.
Yeah.
That the ability to call black people that word, the ability to slap women around and fuck them when you want them, is part of what made America great.
Yep.
And riding high, being the white guy high on the saddle, being John fucking Wayne, is what America's all about. And anytime you step away from that one inch and start talking about us and we and taking my hard-earned money and giving it to those goddamn people, you are destroying my country. And those people, that mob of privileged, white, bigoted, head-up-their-ass, ignorant, old men now own the Republican Party and pretty much always have.
They own a huge chunk of the media
yeah.
as well. And
that's why And that's why when it comes to – David Frum had a guy in his on his post, in his column, a guy named Michael Stafford. Was a younger gentleman, but he also, in the same week, gave up on being a Republican. And it was with a heavy heart, a broken heart, blah, blah, blah. This is a younger person, but he comes down to, from the moment the Tea Party emerged on the scene, I had a premonition that I would eventually have to leave the GOP. Well, I think about that.
Wow.
This person, it only dawned on this dimwit 3 years ago that he'd eventually have to leave the GOP. And I have a great deal of respect for this woman. It takes a lot of courage. I've mocked these people before for not having the courage that she's shown.
The woman in Arizona is the one we need to talk about. Because she came out by name.
She did.
She's a private citizen, not a member of the media elite, who came out to the newspaper as someone who is critical of her party. And you and I have talked before, Driftglass, about wanting to see reform within the Republican Party to the point where once again, we can debate facts, and we can have a general understanding of science and how do we solve the problem, and have a debate about government solutions versus private solutions, government spending versus quote-unquote fiscal responsibility, which is a joke because the Republican Party started two unpaid wars, but among a bunch of other things. But we can have a debate about that. And you can't have a debate about that if one side continually just denies that facts exist. And this woman lost it over, you know, they just went too far. And I understand your frustration. Let's talk a little bit about that. Because I said that she should be credited for her candor.
And I agree. I agree. But I think that, and this is what.
You have
this
questions
is where
for her.
I do. And the same question applies very broadly. And very much more so, I must say, because she's a private citizen and took a risk, and I respect that, and more power to her. I have nothing but nice things to say about her specifically.
I can't imagine being part of that cult of that the Republican Party has become, being part of the Borg. Everybody take a drink. we're reversing in more ways than one. I'm the one that made the first science fiction reference in this podcast.
Honey, Star Trek is not science fiction. So
we're saving that for our bonus podcast. That's going to be 3 hours long.
There you go. Let me tell you what real science fiction is now, honey. In small, in little condescending
words. Little words?
Yeah. Happy to.
Anyhow, if you have to go against that Borg where, you know, like with Jeb Bush, the minute you say one thing against the Tea Party establishment, you're a Republican in name only and you're just derided in every conservative blog out there as being a traitor. I mean, I can't imagine what it's like with her Tea Party neighbors now.
Oh, again, I
just can't imagine what that's like.
I have the same. Let us imagine that you and I were having a beer with her and her husband, or
and happy to do it.
Other, whatever.
And talk to her, sure.
We'd have a lovely sit on the porch, have a lovely time, have a beer, talk about this. And I'm sure we'd have I don't swear constantly and point Jacques style in public all the time.
I'm nice, yeah.
We're nice, civilized people, and we don't do that unless we have to. But you know, when somebody throws down in public, I throw right back. I'm happy to do it, and I will stay there all night long, toe-to-toe, if I have to. However, this woman made a very brave decision. But I would set a much higher bar for people like David Frum, who have been wrong their entire adult life and yet want to keep their place at the trough. Sure, I've been fucking wrong about it. Yeah, I was Bush's speechwriter. Yeah, I cooked up the term Axis of Evil. Yes, I was all those horrible things, but I still want a job in the media.
Right.
No, you have to go to the back of the line, David. You got to go into the wilderness for 10 years and figure out where you fucked up, and then you can come back, and if your talent warrants it, you get to have another turn at being a public figure. But no. From Andrew Sullivan to David Frum to David, you know, the usual suspects – their whole thing is they feel it is their right to have a place at the table no matter how wrong they are. And the fact that lots of people in the media got the Republican Party completely wrong for a very long time, and Mark Halperin being, you know, top of that fucking list. And the fact that it doesn't matter how badly Mark Halperin fucks up, because he doesn't have a gag reflex.
Yeah.
He can swallow gigatons of shit and smile and wipe his chin and ask for more. That's his talent. So I would ask people who want to now say, I was wrong, they're crazy, I had to get out. I'd set a much lower threshold for a private citizen, but my question would be the same. For media figures, it would be, all right, what are you going to do to redeem yourself? What acts of contrition and atonement are you going to perform to make up for being a giant destructive asshole for the last 20 years? No, you do not get to have columns in Newsweek as your act of atonement. You have to go teach history at a small local private college. That's what you have to do. It's not that you get one less Newsweek column every month.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
not atonement or contrition. And until you're punished, and I mean punished in a way you will understand, punished like you have to punish an 8-year-old, we got to take something away from you that you like so that you understand not to do this anymore. The only thing Andrew Sullivan likes is the spotlight. And that will never be taken away from him. The only thing David Frum wants is a job writing for money for some political person. He doesn't give a shit who it is. That has to be taken away from him for a time. This woman, on the other hand, all I would ask from her, as well as the other people, is what do you think – and I mean this very respectfully – what do you think is wrong with you that you could be in this – horrible party surrounded by these awful people doing terrible things decade after decade after decade, and you never noticed, or you ignored, or you pretend. I know that something was the straw that broke the camel's back. Got that. But why wasn't the straw that broke the camel's back the Iraq war?
Yeah.
Why wasn't it the stolen
and
election?
I want to know an even more meta question than that, is which is, why is I was asleep a valid answer to that question?
Mm-hmm.
Why is that accepted even within your own circle?
Mm-hmm.
That, well, I was asleep during the, I know there were bad things that happened during the Bush administration, but I was asleep during that. You were asleep during, after 9/11, you were asleep when we went to war with mm-hmm. a country that wasn't responsible. Were you asleep when Barack Obama got Osama bin Laden? Were you asleep when that happened?
Mm-hmm.
And then why should we listen to you?
Well, and the answer is, now you have to stop voting for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
They may
very well do that. I mean,
and that would be fine with me. And again, when it comes to having a beer and talking about the state of the world, that's fine. But if you just caught on to the fact that the Arizona Republican Party is crazy a month ago, then you get big points for catching on, and you get a lot of points taken off for being that fucking slow for that fucking long. And if you can sit down and with an FBI profiler and explain psychologically, ideologically, theologically, economically, whatever, what is the composition of your brain that made you able to will away the entire real world for decades and just pretend it wasn't happening? What made you such a good German for so long? And I get the thing that trigger.
I know you're saying that in the context of this podcast, but you can't phrase it that way in a bar with someone that you're having a beer with.
No,
why were
you
such a good German for so long? You really have to put it in a way that's conversational. We need to be clear with people that we're not attacking them. This has to be carefully phrased and genuine, a genuine question about what are the responsibilities of citizenship for you then?
Mm-hmm.
If you were able to sleep through two wars and an unfunded Medicare, pharmaceutical handout, I noticed you weren't asleep when George Bush tried to privatize Medicare and Social Security. I noticed you weren't asleep for that, were you? Were you and were you asleep when Barack Obama got Osama bin Laden? Were you asleep for that? Were you asleep when the troops came home from Iraq? Apparently your sleepiness is a little bit selective based on your politics.
You have some kind of political sleep apnea where you suddenly wake up. for brief periods of time, and then you go back to sleep for a while.
Yeah.
And what I would do if in this fictional world is I would assign her a reading from They Thought They Were Free, Milton Mayer's They Thought They Were Free, which is about after National Socialist Party was rising up in Germany. I'll quote you, if you don't mind, just a little bit from this wonderful essay. This is the rise of the National Socialism in Germany and what those people did. And the author who went through and interviewed people after the fact, the question was, how could you have stood for this? How could you have let this happen? One person answered, and then one day, too late, your principles, if you were ever sensible to them, all rush in upon you. The burden of self-deception has grown too heavy. And some minor incident, in my case, my little boy, hardly more than a baby, saying Jewish swine, collapses it all at once, and you see that everything has changed, and changed completely under your nose. The world you live in, your nation, your people, is not the world you were born in at all. The forms are all there. All untouched, all reassuring, the houses, the shops, the jobs, the mealtimes, the visits, the concerts, the cinema, the holidays, but the spirit, which you never noticed because you made the lifelong mistake of identifying it with the forms, is changed. Now you live in a world of hate and fear, and the people who hate and fear do not even know it themselves. When everyone is transformed, no one is transformed. Now you live in a system which rules without responsibility even to God. The system itself could not have intended this in the beginning, but in order to sustain itself, it was compelled to go all the way. Yeah. And I want to know how to trip that trigger earlier. That's all. Mm-hmm. I want to know if it's possible for these people, as desperately asleep and as desperately bigoted as a lot of them are, desperately ignorant as they are, and holding themselves ignorant, trying desperately to shut the outside world out, if there's a way to get through to them. I want to know what it is, because if there isn't a way to get through to them, then we have a very, very ugly future in front of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're at, 5 years from now, 8 years from now, we're going to be in a shooting war with these people. And that scares the shit out of me, because half the electorate in this country are sound asleep, and the other half are divided 40%, 40%, with a tiny sliver in the middle who are swayed by what David Brooks says. And that scares the shit out of me.
And that's what we want to... That's a wonderful segue to our next topic.
Thank you.
You had a question come in to your email.
Yeah, to my blog.
Why do you attack David Brooks and not Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity?
Yeah, and it's a perfectly legitimate question. And I thought about that a lot. I do think about that a lot. First of all, because there is an entire liberal media industrial complex, tiny though it is. It's called MSNBC and Media Matters. And the big blogs and liberal radio, which all attack Rush Limbaugh. They would collapse if there weren't Rush Limbaugh to attack. Every Ed show practically starts off with, "Today Rush Limbaugh said this." Mm-hmm. And every Al Sharpton show says, "Rush Limbaugh, that son of a bitch," kind of thing. Yeah, yeah. It's Fox News and hate radio does its crazy shit during the day. And way too much, in my opinion, of liberal talk radio and television spends all of its day reacting with shock and horror at what the latest outrage by those people. They lean against each other like two drunks. And I get why. One of them happens to be right. One of them happens to be wrong. But there's no dearth of an industry of people who go into, in great detail, Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity. Al Franken wrote a whole book about Rush Limbaugh. That was read by millions and millions and millions of people. And it is my firm belief that if you listen to Rush or you watch Sean Hannity or Bill O'Reilly and you watch them as if they're telling you the truth, you are democratically unsalvageable.
Yeah, I was going to say, if your mentality is Rush is right about everything and ditto, there is no arguing with facts with you.
You are beyond salvation. I mean, and part of the problem we have is not the both sides do. The part of the problem we have is we are now in the middle of trench warfare, mm-hmm. where they're just not going to admit they're wrong ever. It doesn't matter how. And again, the number of outrages that get reported breathlessly by people I admire in the media, by me sometimes, by you sometimes, Flugel. Can you believe that so-and-so did thus and so today? Can you believe Ann Coulter said this crazy shit? Well, of course I can.
Yeah.
Ann Coulter's whole job is to be an awful harridan and say vicious, racist, lying shit. And David Gregory's job is to put her on television and treat her like she's, you know, a normal
every summer person. She's on. And it's when you run out of you know, everyone else is on vacation, you bring on Ann Coulter. It's really bizarre.
Or Michelle Malkin or some other right-wing nutbag. And that's just how television works. So that's her thing. And she sells millions of books to millions of inbred hicks in trailers, apparently, who you read them and use them as insulation during the winter, I suppose, or soup them up and eat them. I don't know. But she makes a very good living telling, exactly as I said before in this podcast, telling ignorant, bigoted people that they're really heroic and brave and patriotic and that liberals are the internal enemy that must be destroyed at all costs. So that thing, that machine, I can't have any effect on that. There's no amount of my only tools are logic, language, facts, and persuasion. And they are immune to all of that. It just bounces off of them. It doesn't matter that Mitt Romney lies all the time. They don't care. So I have given up not on acknowledging that they exist or that they have a terrible effect. I have given up trying to treat them like fellow citizens when it comes to persuasion, because they have divorced themselves from civic life. They're now their own little country with their own government and their own religion and their own newspaper and practically their own currency. And the fact that they are devoted to destroying my country is what bothers me. However, they cannot govern this country. They can't rule. They can't take over without the able assistance, the complicity of people like David Brooks. Because David Brooks exists. People like David Brooks exist to provide, first of all, provide conservatives a place to hide when they get caught lying.
Yeah.
He digs them their spider hole. He's the one who says, well, both sides do it. David Gregory, well, both sides do it. Mark Halper, well, both sides. The entire stock and trade of those people is to give conservatives an excuse that liberals are just as bad every time conservatives get caught being the lying, bigoted scumbags that they are. And David Brooks' second function is to tell people in the middle that the worst enemy of American stability and good order are hippies.
Yep.
And
the moral relativism of the left.
Exactly. And ignoring the fact that, you know, he's been wrong about everything. He's wrong about economics. He's wrong about foreign affairs. He was bloody Bill Kristol's partner at the Weekly Standard. And the fact that the emotional and ideological energy of these various groups, whether you're a conservative or a liberal or a scumbag, cowardly centrist or independent, whatever you want to call yourself, are useless. They're diffused and unimportant until they are focused through a lens, until they have a way to express themselves. And the New York Times is the most influential newspaper in this fucking country. What happens at the New York Times really matters. The millions of people in the middle who want to sound clever and want to sound like they're in the know, get their political information, get their insider information, get their opinions from Meet the Press and David Brooks and Tom Friedman. And that's what makes them incredibly dangerous, because David Brooks is every bit as big a liar as Rush Limbaugh. He's every bit as destructive. He's every bit as disastrous. He's every bit as complicit in the conservative destruction of this country as Rush Limbaugh is. But he's mild-mannered and wears a little soft tie and speaks in very, very reasonable tones and talks in this pastel, tapioca monotone. And as a consequence, there is no industry devoted to taking down David Brooks like there is with Rush Limbaugh. There is no industry devoted to taking down Tom Friedman. There is no industry devoted to taking down David Gregory or Mark Halper or any of the people who control the media and who sell the message to the vast middle of the electorate that both sides are always wrong. And that's why I devote so much of my time to David Brooks, because without him helping conservatives by giving them a place to hide out when they fuck up, this battle is a lot easier. Yeah. Imagine if the New York Times or Meet the Press adopted the Mann and Ornstein approach that, you know what? The problem with this country really is the Republicans.
Well, as journalists. PBS NewsHour, same thing.
Yeah.
Look, we're not going to listen to David Brooks because really, David, your party is the problem.
Yeah. Imagine if as journalists, yeah. I mean, if these people woke up one day and discovered themselves to be journalists as opposed to the authoritarian, knob-sucking servants of power that they really are. Mm-hmm. David Brooks didn't get what he got because he's talented. David Brooks got wealth and fame and privilege and a big old mansion because he sucks off power.
Yep.
Because he serves power. He serves the empire. And he doesn't understand why people don't get that that's a noble calling. He looks around him. He sees his beautiful house. He sees his lovely wife. He sees all the millions he has in the bank. He sees this lovely life he's built for himself. And it's all built on being a groveling servant to power. And so he looks beneath him and gets angry at people who mock him. Because for him, sucking up is the system.
Yep, and that's the,
what makes America.
And all of the wealth that he gets for that is validation.
Yes.
He's right. He must be right because I have all this money.
I have all this money. I have all this privilege. I'm invited to all these shows. I'm invited to talk about shit that I clearly don't know anything about. People listen to me. They formulate their political opinions around me. And I am rewarded for saying the silly shit that occasionally Paul Krugman slaps me over. And I'm really pissed that people don't kiss my ass.
I want to bring up something that Petocchio brought up in an email to me this morning, and I'm sure he won't mind me reading this little part of it. Forgive me, Petocchio, ahead of time. Petocchio's at vagabondscholar.blogspot.com.
Petocchio is awesome.
And he's a friend of ours. We just love him. He said to me that he thinks Brooks has been getting more heat recently because he's always fighting a rear guard action. And as the Republican Party has moved further to the right, so has he. I mean, the whole political debate has moved to the right because of centrism, which is Brooks's stock in trade. But he's having to move to the right even more so. And Petocchio continues, he used to occasionally write about compassion for the poor and doing better for them. And I remember seeing his appearance on the NewsHour after Katrina.
Oh, yeah.
And he just threw up his hands and said, this is a failure on a massive scale of government. There's nothing, we can't call it anything else. We needed to be there. Government needed to be there. Government needed to spend money. Government needed to save people. And we screwed it up.
It was an abject failure. I remember distinctly writing the only laudable post I've ever written, post lauding, was I agree with everything David Brooks just said.
He's
absolutely right. He was indignant. He was horrified, as we all were. Mm-hmm. And he called out the right people. He didn't say, oh, if only liberals had it.
Yeah, no.
He said this was a failure.
Yep.
Of this institution, which is run by these people, and there's no excuse for it. I agree with him. And again, if we could wave a magic wand or transport ourselves over to what I call the better universe, where it's full of journalists.
Yeah.
They have the same jobs. Yep. They're in the same offices.
And they have to try to find out.
Boy, they're actual journalists.
You're king of the transitions today. Because here we go to talk about journalism. I'm about to quote Politico, Driftglass.
Oh, no. But then I will just say this. If we were to magically transform Meet the Press and This Week and the New York Times op-ed page and all those other opinion-making institutions into places where actual journalism is committed, then the first loyalty of those people would be to the truth. And the truth is what's screwing this country up more than anything else is the Republican Party. So every discussion on – imagine for a second if every discussion on Meet the Press or This Week or on PBS or in the Oregon major magazines and newspapers was because Republicans have wrecked the country, here's what we have to do.
And, you know, even if – they weren't willing to go that far if they thought that was too editorial.
Sure.
I would be perfectly fine with the better universe where we looked at the Ryan budget and talked about what it was actually going to do.
You mean math?
Yeah. And looked at the math behind the Ryan instead of about Paul Ryan's fifis when it comes to what mean people are saying about him because they don't like serious government. They don't like serious answers to the problems that we face, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And if you would just, you know, if David Gregory would just get somebody on, just it doesn't even have to be a journalist or a famous person. Have an accountant on your show.
have an eighth grade math student on your show showing
are you smarter than an eighth grade math student?
Yeah, here's the, as my former father-in-law used to say, here are the takeaways and gazintas.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
This is and here's how the Paul Ryan budget absolutely liquidates the poor, absolutely destroys
and
the
government.
And
creates deficits.
Creates deficits as far as I can see. Cuts taxes for people who've had their nothing but tax cuts
tax
for the last
cuts,
3 years.
Cuts for billionaires and screw the poor.
And period.
And as a result, what we get is – and screw the middle class. And as a result, what we get is deficits. And
we get feudalism.
Feudalism.
Feudalism
you
forever.
You don't
and
even
if
have
you...
to go there. I'm serious. If you are going to be just non-editorial about it and not say feudalism, not say anything that smacks of judgment, just here are the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
The poor will suffer this much. The middle class will suffer this much. The billionaires will get a tax break. And the bottom line is the U.S. deficit will be this.
And
it will be increased by this much because this budget does that. And you left
and
it at that. End of story.
Well, no, I'd take one more thing. And if you want to vote for that.
Right, now vote for that. Do you want to vote for that?
Vote for that, knowing that that's what you're voting for.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
That's what, quote-unquote, serious people in Washington want to have happen. And every Republican in the U.S. House of Representatives voted yes for that. Is that what you think should happen?
And if there were a sudden invasion of journalists, if journalism were suddenly taken over by journalists, that's what the news would look like. And you and I could go back to living.
It's like when Cronkite went to Vietnam.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, we can't win this war. Oh.
Yeah. That's a fact.
Yeah. Here's another fact. This budget increases suffering among the poor, decimates the middle class, and creates deficits by cutting taxes for billionaires. And every Republican in the House of Representatives voted yes. If you have a Republican congressman, he voted yes.
And
what are you going to do about it?
And the reason we are broken is that the people who are most – the reason – our media cannot function as it is now. It will never, ever heal itself. It has to be destroyed and rebuilt from the ground up. Is people like David Brooks are beholden, absolutely beholden for his very existence to the people who would benefit from the Ryan budget.
Exactly. And he benefits from the Ryan budget himself.
Absolutely.
And we
therefore,
have to talk about transparency in the media in terms of salaries, in terms of taxes, in terms of investments, et cetera, et cetera. If we have no idea. I mean, we know David Gregory's wife worked for Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac or one of them. She was one of the three people who had to resign when the government bailed out. I think it was Fannie Mae. She was an attorney at one of the top three people at that organization who had to resign when the government bailed them out. That was the sacrifice. She was that high up.
Mm-hmm.
That was David Gregory's wife.
And George Will's wife.
And George Will's wife works for worked for
Rick Perry.
Rick Perry. But that's different.
Andrew Mitchell's husband destroyed the American economy.
And how many of them own stock in Northrop Grumman?
Mm-hmm.
That's
good question.
We need to know that. Mm-hmm. That's not. You can't be a disinterested, I'm just reporting here.
Mm-hmm.
If you know that your taxes and your investments and your bottom line and your mansions and your country club membership are all going to be affected by the kinds of change that this professional left podcast is advocating.
Yes. And you know who would be really good at finding that information out? Reporters.
Reporters. Journalists.
Journalists. And I've said this before. This is the complete collapse of the republic of one of the two major political parties in this country, its complete implosion into a zombie madhouse full of raving lunatics.
Speaking of which, I have to quickly
is
mention
one of the greatest
stories.
It's one of the greatest stories in American
history,
and we don't have a free press anymore to cover those things, which is a shame because it's a great
story. Right through the middle of this wonderful story that they could be telling. Yeah. We have to talk about John Klein, who is a Republican congressman from the Twin Cities.
Okay.
And he wrote an op-ed over at the Politico on education and student loans, and it was called Market Can Fix Student Loans. And I just want to read one part of it. And hat tip to Progressive Breakfast for this. If you don't subscribe to the Progressive Breakfast email newsletter, it's a very good thing to do. He said, or in his op-ed, and what I'd like to do as I read this, people at listening at home, count the number of Frank's Lunsisms that you hear.
Take a drink for everyone.
Take a drink every time you hear a Frank Luntz catchphrase. Okay, here we go. For too many years, politicians in Washington have been eager to pledge more hard-earned taxpayer dollars to help deal with the student debt load. But this doesn't sit right with the many Americans who take pride in making fiscally responsible choices and paying off their loans on time. Let's take politicians out of the college cost equation and base student loan interest rates on the free market rather than on the whims of Washington.
Yeah.
I counted 48% Luntz in that. I did word count, and 48% of the words in that are Luntz. And I want to know whether that's bad. My first question is, okay, let's leave it to the market, and that means that student loan rates actually have to go down.
Yes.
From 3.7% or whatever they are.
Zero.
Down to at least 1.5, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you're going to call it an unsecured loan because a person's education doesn't guarantee a job anymore, mm-hmm. you can do that. Then it's got to be like 1.5%, right? So that big lie there is problem number one. Problem number two is because the House is run by the Republican Party, this bozo is the chairman of the Education Committee.
Yeah. Yes, he is.
And
yes, he is.
The third mm-hmm. problem is this editorial is 48% Luntz, and that's lazy. That's just he's given up arguing. He's not arguing to anyone. He's printing. He and the Politico, which is what was it that I said about John? Oh, that debate guy who asked the question about Conan or Leno. What was his John King?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, douchebag or collaborator?
Yeah.
And you know, the Politico is 50% douchebag, 50% collaborator on this. But what I want to know is John Klein just lazy? And so he's just got the Frank Luntz checklist and he's just going to spew this out because then he has a line in Politico.
Mm-hmm.
Is he doing it because it works with voters, because voters are lazy and they're just going to believe, oh, hardworking taxpayers who pay their debt on time, that's me.
Yeah.
But John Klein's district has St. Olaf College in it. You know, John Klein has college students and parents of college students in his district. And yet he's been reelected to the House once or twice, and he's in a safe seat. And I don't understand why. Is it because the Frank Luntz stuff works? Does it work because voters are lazy, or is he just being lazy? Because no one's really paying attention to him anyway.
Do you remember seeing Paul Krugman? This is a little bit discursive, but it'll come to a real sharp point, I promise you. Remember seeing Paul Krugman in Britain?
Yeah, just totally
Innocents Abroad,
yeah.
Going over to the Brits. And he had this wonderful online debate with
a bunch
austerity-drunk
yeah.
British economists.
Yeah.
And essentially just spanked them really bad. He just made them look incredibly stupid. And the British accent adds 20 perceived IQ points to most any conversation. I say that because my stepfather is British and very bright. But he just took them to school. He just absolutely wrecked their argument. And he finally got them to admit that their arguments are all moral.
Mm-hmm.
That it's just immoral to let people do these things, and the poor need to be beaten a little bit harder,
yeah,
and then they'll straighten up and fly right.
Right.
Is that British?
Right. They'll work harder if they, why? And then the poor can go out and buy more money.
Yes, like start companies to create more money with the money they got from their daddies.
Yeah.
You know, just the beatings will continue until the economy improves.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you get down to it, and there are certain interlocking, like thatched roofs or paving stones. There are certain interlocking moral, cultural arguments that the right always makes that are disguised as economic arguments. But when you strip away all of their really stupid economic arguments. It gets down to morality. I don't want to give my money to those people.
Yeah.
Because those people aren't white like me, and therefore they're lazy and they're irresponsible. And so.
And never mind that most of the people receiving government money are white like you. They're white like you.
Yes.
In fact, they live in your house. So.
Yes. Well, that doesn't count.
Yeah.
Again, these are interlocking arguments, and it doesn't matter if you defeat one on the facts. They always have another one.
Oh, it's like the white Texas farmers who are so upset that some of the farm aid offices in Texas are being closed because there's federal cutbacks.
Yeah.
And I have to drive all the way to Odessa to get my check. You know, and it's freaking them out. But you guys voted for this. You voted
I voted
for this.
Those people to have their ox gored, not me.
Yeah.
And again, the defeating the logic of screwing students. You know, I recently had a little conversation where it was, you know, the blame for the gigantic amount of student loan debt. The cost of college and everything else was put squarely on the back of middle-class students. They're irresponsible. They just throw the money away. Every time you have government intervening in the marketplace and providing them with money, you know, that's what's driving the prices up. Blah, 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 blah. Well, bullshit.
Yeah.
And again, if you want to defeat that argument, go look up the Servicemen's Readjustment Act of 1944, which is commonly called the GI Bill.
Yeah.
Exactly the same arguments were made by this. Actually, MSNBC gets
called,
wrong.
Right, it was called welfare.
It was not called welfare. I looked this up. Lawrence Arnold got it wrong. It was there were a few opponents to the bill. They were racist. Southern. The chair of the committee opposed it and opposed it because it would cause people to become lazy and shiftless. The term welfare was never used. But I kind of let him get away with it because the word dole was used or other words were used. But it was about blacks.
And blacks were going to go to college on this money.
Well, they don't know how to use this money. But it was a very definite sense that there are certain good people in this country who deserve help. And there are lazy, shiftless people who will just piss the money away. But if you simply make the argument that if you put a lot of government money behind sending people to college, that will cause college prices to skyrocket because people – now the marketplace has been deformed by the presence of money. Bullshit. The GI Bill dumped a shitload of money into the market, put way – according to this, by the end of the program, 2.2 million veterans had used the GI Bill in order to attend colleges, and 6.6 million had used the benefits for some kind of training program. That – paid it for itself over and over and over again. So you can defeat the economic argument that if you introduce government money, welfare, dole, loans, whatever you want to call it, into the system, that will automatically cause the system to become inflationary and cause rampant runaway price increases. That's just bullshit because it happened once with the GI Bill and that was not the results. The results were college became affordable for everybody, and we had a sudden massive increase in the educated workforce, which led to huge benefits. So, but it doesn't matter. That's the point. You can defeat this guy on the economics and facts of it, but you will never change his mind.
Right.
Because behind that, he has his Frank Luntz moral argument. And the moral argument's just the same as the one Lee Atwater used. Those people.
Yeah.
Those people aren't like us. You're taking my good white money away from me that I earn and giving it to lazy, shiftless black people who are just going to piss it away. That argument got Ronald Reagan the White House. That argument won George H.W. Bush the White House. That argument got George W. Bush into the White House. And it's been standard Republican dicta or dogma ever since. And the problem is they've created this monster that has to be fed now. That wants to be told every problem they have, from the housing bubble to student loan debt to the collapse of the manufacturing bases, somehow it all has to be traced back for moral reasons, for cultural reasons. Every problem these fuckers have, they have to find a way to trace it back to lazy Negroes, sleazy Mexicans, uppity women, and liberals. And so Frank Luntz and his ilk exist to give them the vocabulary to make those arguments. in bumper sticker form. And they're all, again, they're all tarted up to look like facts, but you can defeat the facts fairly easily. And yet, once you've defeated their factual basis on which these people make these arguments, they still don't change their mind. And that's the problem. They will never change their mind because they are deep down, rock-ribbed, wannabe fucking Klansmen. This is the rump battalion of the Confederate Army. It took 600,000 deaths and years of bloody civil war to put these people back in their place when the issue was slavery. It took federal troops to put these fuckers back in the box when the issue was civil rights. And it scares the shit out of me that the Republican Party has reconstituted these people, given them a mission and a purpose and billions and billions and billions of dollars. And we're going to have to put these fuckers right back in their box one more time. And I'm desperately trying to find a way to do that without shooting each other.
Yeah.
And that's what scares me.
I want to point out something totally related to that, which is, I don't know if you noticed when Louisiana passed a funding plan for schools that included school vouchers that could be used to pay for tuition at religious schools.
Uh-huh.
And one of the first schools to apply to be included in the voucher program is the Islamic School of Greater New Orleans. And
God bless them.
Yeah, well, people are losing their shit over that. You know, we don't want it to be Sharia law taught in the schools with tax money. You know, we're perfectly willing to have taxpayer dollars spent for white Christian America.
Absolutely.
Male-dominated America.
White Christian conservative America.
Conservative male-dominated America.
Those Unitarian Universalists, we don't trust
them. We're not so sure about those Mormons either.
Yeah.
To tell you the truth. If we're going to be honest here, but don't quote me on that.
Mm-hmm.
We want to thank our listeners. You guys are great. I wish we had more time today to read some of your letters on the air. We have received so many nice emails and letters, not just this week, but over the course of the month. And we're very grateful to you. I think a lot of people listened to the podcast twice last week. We had enormous numbers of podcast listeners, like 3,000 more listeners than we usually get, which is
great. Well, let me ask you, Blue Guy.
Yeah.
Did Nehru's Nation suck that bad?
I don't think so. I think a lot of people listen to podcasts on the plane going to Nehru's Nation.
Yeah. I think you're absolutely right.
Load up their smartphones or whatever and mm-hmm. listen that way. And
turn their smartphones into very, very smartphones.
Yeah, so. There you go. Mm-hmm. And speaking of smartphones, we have an app available at the iTunes store that allows you access to both our blogs, podcasts, and bonus podcast episodes whenever we put one out, which isn't very often. But so if you have an iPhone, you can download our app at the iTunes store for free. If you have another kind of smartphone, you can download Stitcher Radio and listen to us. And I wanted to point out this week that in the news and politics category of Stitcher Radio, we are number 82. We're in the top 100. And we're just below Neil Cavuto.
Yes!
And we're coming for you, Neil. I just got to say.
We're coming for you, Cavuto. Oh, yeah, your next Cavuto.
And apparently the ranking on this sort of thing, we wanted to let people know, is using Stitcher Radio to subscribe to us, first of all. And then once you do that, if your boss doesn't read your Facebook stream, if you can share us on Facebook or on Twitter from Stitcher Radio. But also you can email this to someone. And I tried it. I emailed it to myself, our podcast to myself to test it from Stitcher Radio. Apparently that bumps up our rankings.
Wow.
So email this to your loved ones. Email our podcast to your loved ones via Stitcher Radio. And that's, again, a free app called Stitcher, Stitcher Radio. And it works on iPhones and smartphones as well. Find that and help us move up the list to beat out Neil Cavuto.
Yeah. Yeah. But next week, I want Cavuto.
We want Cavuto to be below, under us. Yes.
Less than just beneath our chariot wheels. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You can listen to our podcast for free at our website as well, professionalleft.blogspot.com. And every week at our website and at our Facebook page, we have an internet kitty. People send us your pictures of your internet kitties. And there is not a wait list. There is a line of succession to be the Internet Kitty of the week. This week's Internet Kitty is Sir Edmund Hillary.
Oh, my.
Quite elegant cat. And he will be up at our website and our Facebook page this week. We're very grateful to you for sending us pictures of your kitties. You can send them to us at our email address, which is proleftpodcast@gmail.com. Please use the subject line Internet Kitty if you're sending us a picture of your kitty. Mm-hmm. And if you want to write to us about anything else, you may do that either at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, or at our P.O. Box, which is P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791. We really appreciate your financial contributions, especially if you listened to the podcast twice last week and you haven't contributed anything before. It will give you very good karma to donate $5 to our podcast either through our PayPal button, $5 or more, to our PayPal through our PayPal button at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, or at our P.O. Box. And that P.O. Box, by the way, is at our website if you aren't at a place where you can write it down. Finally, we are on Netroots Radio, netrootsradio.blogspot.com, from 6 to 7 Pacific and 9 to 10 Eastern. There's a lot going on over there. If you like left-wing radio, I suggest you check it out. Feel free to write us in Driftglass. I think we're due for another letter show sometime this summer.
Absolutely,
we are.
We just
need to do one. But feel free to write us and be aware that if you write us at that address, we reserve the right to read your email on the air unless you say otherwise. And we have had correspondence this week from people who said, please do not read this on the air. And we're glad that we do pay attention to that. So,
Well, we do get a lot of really cool, I guess you'd say, insider information. Nothing that's tradable or monetizable,
no.
But fascinating stories about the entertainment industry, about politics, about local government, all kinds of really cool stuff.
How things work in my state office. Yeah, that kind of thing. This is how things are working in Chicago right now. Oh, my gosh. Yes.
And I got to say, our letter writers are good writers.
Good writers, erudite spellers.
Yeah. One up on me.
One up on a lot of GOP people, too. Oh, my gosh.
Don't mock the poor people. They're trying
I know.
Hard
you and I had almost a down-out fight about that, about whether you can make fun of stupid people on the TV this week.
Yeah.
And you defended the stupid people. You defended the stupid people, not me.
I did not. I defended the context in which the mocking of stupid
people. Well, and I understand. It's one thing to mock stupid people, and especially if they're Republican officials, and it's another thing to mock stupid, ignorant people because they're poor. I get that. I do. I get it.
I know.
I get that. All right.
See?
We agree.
You thought we'd have a fight, but we ended
Mommy
up.
Mommy and Daddy are not fighting, and so everything's fine. We both love you.
It's okay. It's okay. No, sometimes we love each other. We have a disagreement sometimes. Go back to bed. It's fine. Well, you know, and I lived a long time, essentially a fairly solitary existence. Mm-hmm. And now I have a house full of cats and kids and a lovely wife, and I'm very happy.
Yeah.
But it requires opening and closing doors.
Yes, it requires locking doors sometimes. Yeah. And parents know that. I mean,
You have to treat it like a NASA airlock. It's very making sure everybody has privacy and everybody's space is respected.
Yeah. And this is a small house. This really is a small house we live in.
Yeah.
I think it's 2,000 square feet.
Yeah. And
the bathroom opens right into our bedroom. I mean, it's not. And then out into the living room. It's a corridor. The bathroom is a corridor from our bedroom to the living room. And
this Chicago is hopefully was soon, and some good soul will buy it, but is much more cavernous.
Yeah.
Spacious, higher ceilings.
You have to to duck in this house to get through doors with your 6'8" frame. Yeah,
I do. I absolutely do. And I'm happier here.
Yep.
No contest. But it's life in the space shuttle versus life in a cave by yourself.
All by yourself.
It's a hurt.
Yeah.
And that has been a very interesting transition for me.
Well,
you
had 10 years with 2 full baths to yourself.
Yep.
And now it's 5 people, 2 of whom are little girls who have flowers on their towels and privacy for the ladies. And I'm taking a tubby, but first I have to go potty. And you're sitting at your laptop in the bedroom going, okay, close the door all the way, would you please?
Yes. And then my internal timer goes off, which it never did in Chicago.
You've been and in I go, the knock, tub knock. Long enough. That's enough water.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
Yeah, and I'm blissfully happy.
Oh, and happy Father's Day, Driftglass, by the
way.
Thank you. Yeah, Father's Day is Sunday, and I did want to say that on the podcast, that you certainly have been adopted.
I have.
I mean, our kids have a biological dad and you, and what was it that the youngest one said to you this week when you were walking her up to bed? I can't decide who's...
Who's number? And basically,
she's
our rating.
Trying to rank the parents or
yes.
something.
Sometimes it's me, and sometimes it's always you.
Yeah, yeah.
But we're trying, and I'm just like, no, you get three parents for the price of two.
Yeah.
Three grown-ups who would love you for the price of two.
Yes, she totally accepted that, but she said, I don't know who to. It wasn't who to love more, but it was I don't know how to rank. It was something about ranking. Like she didn't use that word, but it was like who's number one.
Yeah.
Even though you were taking her up to bed all the time this week.
Opening my mouth and hearing my mother's best instincts come out.
Yeah, yeah, which happens to all of us.
Is delightful. Yeah. I mean, not the screaming, eh, I had that too, but there's a lot of sentences, there's a lot of situations that require a certain amount of diplomacy and explanation that I shouldn't have the ability to just instantly draw on and articulate, and yet I find that I can.
Yeah.
Which is really weird for me. And I open my mouth and what I hear coming out are the very best instincts of my mom and my sister and people like that.
Yep.
Popping right out. Yep. Like, oh, okay. Cool. I didn't know, even though I had that resource to draw on. Now, what's the Bible verse about the single man?
Oh, the Lord set up the solitary in families?
Yeah. A lot of truth in that.
Yeah.
A lot of bullshit in that book, but there's not a lot of truth in there too. Blue Gal, how are the internet kiddies doing this week?
Well, the internet kiddies are totally ready to take over the Dylan Radigan show.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
This podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2012, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.